like everyone to kindly bear with us. This is our first day of the seminar. A few things are still not fully in place. Maybe good to at least close the door, to cut down the noise and request the devotees outside not to speak too loud, you know. We have possibly a little sound problem in the sense that I thought we would have a mic, but because there are many seminars going on at the same time, you may kindly move forward, as some of you are doing right now, so that we can hear ourselves and communicate. It is probably not uncommon that on the first day of seminars, some things are being done at the last minute. So first of all, I would like to take this opportunity to thank all of you for being here. In our first, actually what we'll do right away, we haven't really rehearsed this. One devotee can kindly, what are you doing? Who said to bring this? I don't want this to be distributed. Harsha, you just tell them they should not be on the book table. Those books are not meant to be on the book table. Those books are for tomorrow. Okay. Prabhu? You can distribute. We're handing out what will be taking place in today's first. Just split it in two, Prabhu, and they can distribute themselves. Another devotee can just give half and half. Just a few small notes before we actually begin. For a number of reasons, the announcement actually for this seminar was quite late, and mainly because of that, we also could not ascertain how many devotees would register at the seminar. And we have, however, prepared some folders, which we'll distribute a little bit later on. The main thing in the folder today is basically this, for this first module. And I would like to begin by introducing actually those devotees who will be speaking during the 4 days that we'll be having these seminars. A number of things actually we need to explain in this introduction session. And one important thing actually is that the first three sessions or modules will be actually in this room. Maybe we can give the folders actually, because the daily schedule is also, and the timing. These folders can be distributed to all of our attendees. Huh? Do it whatever way is practical. Actually,
they can put their names.
Well, if it's a Mataji's name, you give it to the Mataji's. They can sort it out if they're here. And give the Prabhu's. So the So just a point of information, if it doesn't belong to you, just leave it on the table.
not coming.
The first three sessions are going to be in this room. And then the last session will be in what we have been told, this building, Chaitanya Bhavan. Does anyone know exactly where it's going to be? Okay. I also don't know. It's in this building, but maybe you can find out where the fourth session will be. Right?
Room number three.
Next door.
Next room.
Okay. So that's simple. That makes it easy also. So I'd like to.
It'd be simpler just to give the folders now and give the batch later.
Anyway, it's okay. Nothing is happening right now. So I'd like to begin by introducing, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, those who will be at some particular point during the next 4 days making some presentation or speaking or giving some report. So, after presenting, actually there are a few more speakers who are not here yet. We will need one or two more chairs. Maybe for now it's okay. So I'd like to begin by introducing His Holiness Bhakti Dhira Damodar Maharaj from Nigeria, Africa. I'm sure many of you know him. He's been coming to Mayapur, I think, at Gaur Purnima since a number of years, I suppose. Yeah. And on my left is Samba Prabhu, who is residing here in Mayapur. He's been connected with Varnashram activities for many years also. And on my far right is Ridoy Chaitanya Prabhu, originally from Canada and serving mainly in India. South India, connected with Varnashram and book production, etc. We expect the presence of Daneshwar Prabhu, who is a Prabhupada disciple, very much involved. I came to know just a few days ago, actually, with Vedic economics. You were mentioning he's writing a book on that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Vedic economics, is it?
Yeah.
Right. And he should be joining us, and we will. We hope that he will also be making a presentation, possibly the second. Yeah, probably the second day means tomorrow. I also requested Samba Prabhu to actually be our MC. I'm just starting off this morning because it's our first session and we're just working out a few things. So he'll be our MC, and he will also, Samba Prabhu, be summarizing. You see, basically the fourth session should accommodate a larger number of devotees, because the fourth session is part of the... We're doing something a little bit unorthodox, I suppose, in the sense that normally courses for the Mayapur Institute for Higher Education, they follow very strict regulations, rules. Like normally, all of you would have had to pay like 2,000 rupees or something to attend this course. We worked it out in a different way so that it is free to all of you. And because we wanted to also make it available to a larger, in other words, we are trying to make it a restricted group in the sense that those who are registering. There's a reason for that also, because we want to have a kind of a continuous interaction between ourselves, and if people are changing all the time, it makes it difficult. But in order to give an opportunity to a larger number of devotees, we are having this fourth session as part of the Satsanga seminars, right? So it's like two series of seminars. I just came to know about Satsanga seminars actually a few days back. So the Satsanga seminars give an opportunity for anyone. Somebody may come just for one seminar or two, like that. So in other words, our group here, we will be shifting and we will have some new students, but only for that fourth session every day for the next 4 days. And basically, Samba Prabhu, at the beginning of that fourth session, will summarize briefly, you know, 10, 15 minutes, what has taken place in the first three sessions of every day. And then that fourth session will present some new material. That will be part of the whole Gvarnashram seminar. Just to kind of let you know a little bit what's going to be happening. We have also... Harsha, can you come and sit here, please? You finish with the mechanical... Yeah. We also have Ms. Lodi, Bhakta Harsha, who is based in Secunderabad here in India. Very much involved with Varnashram development. We'll get into more details of that as the course progresses. Harikirtan Prabhu, you should also be here. Harikirtan Prabhu is another devotee who will be giving some report on some of our activities here in India. Actually, Harsha Prabhu, just to come back, he is like coordinating Varnashram activities actually here in India. Harikirtan Prabhu is coordinating in Andhra Pradesh at this particular time in terms of Varnashrama. We have a special session actually that will give more details about Varnashram development or Varnashram activities both worldwide and also specifically in the context of India here. Having introduced briefly our panel members, I think because we're not, you know, like we're not like 300 devotees here, I would like to request if everyone can just mention their name so that we know who is who. Just, you know, your name, where you're based, and maybe what is your main service or activity like that, so that we get a little idea, and then we'll go on to explain a few more things about what will be taking place. So maybe you can start with, well, from the beginning here. You can just stand up and turn around, I guess, or...
Yeah. My name is Rishikesh Chatterjee, and I am associated with both Radha Gopinath Temple and Radha Rasbihari Temple in Bombay, and I am from Bombay only. My native place is West Bengal, and I am working as an engineer in Bhabha Atomic Research Center, Bombay.
Yeah, thank you. So, yeah.
My name is Anirudha Des. I'm from Nigeria. My shidev is Lagos and Benin Biafra temples. I'm a student and of course do a bit of deity worship, arena, youth coordination, and I'm here.
My name is Jean-Claude. I'm coming from Canada. I serve at the Ottawa base. Sometimes I go to Montreal and Toronto. I'm engaged in Sartre Pan.
Thank you.
I'm Sabisachi Das, based at ISKCON Farm at Ahmedabad. Trying to do something regarding developing a community over there.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
Bhakti Rupa Das, stay in Bhubaneswar, India, trying to do some administrative work for ISKCON.
Okay.
Secunderabad,
Govardhan Farm?
At Mumbai.
Mumbai, okay. Yeah, Hare Krishna. From?
Slovenia.
Oh, Slovenia. Quite far. Okay, thank you, sir.
My name is Nima Chaitanya Das. I'm from Belgium.
Okay. Thank you. Yes.
My name is Vishkinchan Das. I'm from South India. Serving in BBK in the last position.
Okay, okay.
I'm from Australia, originally from India. Just here to attend the seminars, and I do some congregational preaching in Australia.
Okay.
Shri Andas, I'm from Golden Farm, and I was from Chupati. I took up the group of farm community.
Yes. Come on, whoever is sitting there.
My name is Yes.
Okay.
You must be a guest from this one.
Okay.
So, I'm Chris Taylor. My name is Mark. I'm sorry, I'm late. I'm new to Krishna consciousness for 1 year, and when someone asked me, a couple of questions, someone asked me what I did before, I said it was a karmic world, now I'm in between. And I would say that my future job would be chanting holy names, and hobby would be reading Srimad Bhagavatam and everything else and the rest.
Sounds good.
Good program, good program.
Anyone else? Back there, can you kind of just mention your name, please? Where you're from and your name?
My name is Shibu Alexei, and I'm from Bulgaria.
Bulgaria. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna. Okay, Hare Krishna. From St. Louis. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, Hare Krishna.
There's also Madhav Prabhu that's not here.
Yeah, what happened to him? Yeah, one more devotee from Gokuldham. Gokuldham in Belgaum. He should be joining us actually.
Madhav.
So he'll be one of our speakers during the sessions also. So yeah, just a few more things here. We have two questionnaires. One of them you will find in your folder. We would request the devotees not to fill it during the during the module, during the presentation, but sometime during the day, if you could give it back to us, just some basic information about yourselves. And then at the end of the fourth session, on the fourth day, we will be giving out what is called an evaluation paper, just so that the can give a little bit of feedback about how the course has gone and maybe some recommendations, etc., like that. So we'll distribute that later on. The time schedule is basically written on the papers that you have, and fortunately there's a clock, but it's in the back, so we have to be probably pretty strict with our time. This first module is already we're running late, practically. I'll just mention what I wanted to give a little summary of what we can expect in the next 4 days. Also, a very brief overview of the different modules, the themes that we will be covering. And we also have, in the last, 15 minutes, I'll try to wrap up actually within 5-10 minutes, we have a short presentation by Samba Prabhu this morning, which is entitled The Challenges on the Path of Implementing or Introducing Varnashram, or the Varnashram Mission. We speak about the Varnashram Mission because, as we will try to explain during the course of our presentation, we're all part of the same mission, Lord Chaitanya's mission, of course, and there are many different aspects, actually there are four main aspects that will in itself be a whole presentation that we will be making, I believe, in the third session, third module this morning. So, what to expect from this seminar? Some devotees already touched on it a little bit. I think it's an opportunity for all of us to deepen our understanding about Varnashrama Dharma. I think we all understand, even if we have recently come in contact with the ideology of Varnashram, or even we have been around for many years and have known about it, it is a very, very vast subject matter and not so easy to both, I would say, clearly grasp, and especially even more difficult to apply or to put into practice. Obviously, during the different modules and the different presentations, and especially we have scheduled our modules in such a way that there will be, hopefully, the schedule is there, sufficient time. I mean, sufficient time will probably be running out of time, hopefully, not in all the modules, but we have given at least 30 minutes in each session for discussion of what has been presented. We very much welcome and request, you know, the feedback and participation from all of you who are here. Depending on if we have more devotees coming, or even as we are now, it may be beneficial. We have actually two modules where we want to break up in smaller groups so that we can have more like in-depth discussions on certain topics. So hopefully by the end of these 4 days, we will all gain a deeper insight into Varnashram. Hopefully also it can increase our conviction as to the need and importance, and also I would say urgency, of introducing Varnashram within our ISKCON society. One of the reasons we're having the seminar is to actually recruit, to actually invite, maybe recruit is a little strong, but to invite people to become part of some of the activities which are ongoing right now at different levels. Already some of you are involved actually in some projects, and we just want to will be proposing some kind of coordination amongst those devotees who are involved with Varnashram, who would like to be involved with Varnashram as well. And something I should mention now also is that by the end of our, like on the fourth day, we hope to bring together, and you should keep this in mind from the very beginning, certain, let's say, proposals or recommendations for our whole society, how we can make steps to materialize in a very practical way certain aspects, at least, of the Varnashrama mission. Time will not allow that I give an overview. I think basically it's there in your papers. I'll just mention the Satsanga seminar. You may not have that. The first day this afternoon, and you can mention this to other people, other devotees who are here, we're going to have something a little bit special in that we have a team of devotees, actually. We call it the Varnashram Research Team, which has been set up here in India since how many months? 6 months?
5 months.
5 months or so. They've worked out a documentary, 31-minute documentary, which will be shown for the very first time. I haven't seen it myself, actually. It just came here yesterday. It's very much connected with Varnashram. The title of it is Save Our Cows, Save Our Planet. Later on, if time allows, Harsha Prabhu, either in this module or the next one, will briefly give some information so that you can invite, because it's going to be for anybody and everyone. That will be the main presentation this afternoon, along with what is called the fourth wave of the ISKCON society. Fourth wave means fourth division, which is basically Varnashram. That is for the Satsanga seminar today. The one tomorrow will give an opportunity for hearing reports, worldwide Varnashram reports from different devotees around the world. And the third session will be Varnashram. It will be on Varnashram education. We will be having a few presentations, especially one main presentation from the director of our Gurukul here in Mayapur, Preeti Vardhana Prabhu. And the fourth day will be discussing about endeavors and attempts which are being made for, I would say, organizing on a very wide scale, on a global scale, actually, Varnashram. And it's better we not speak too much on that right now. There's various information printed, and then the whole day practically will be connected because there are various aspects of that. So, as of the next session, I will not be the one speaking so much, at least directing or coordinating. I will allow our Sambha Prabhu, who is, as we mentioned earlier, for those who are coming a little bit late, he will be our MC for all of these sessions. And it just so happens, it's kind of good that I started, I suppose, because it's difficult for the MC to introduce himself that he's going to be presenting. So he's got about a 15-minute presentation, which hopefully can possibly generate some discussion. After his 15 or 20-minute presentation, we'll have a short break for 10 minutes, and then afterwards reconvene for about 30 minutes for discussion. That basically is going to be our first module. And after the first module, of course, you can just glance over at your schedule. We will have another break for 10 minutes, and then we'll start the second module, which will basically follow the same pattern. There will be a 50-minute, more or less, like presentation, and then that will be followed by a short break, and then another 30-minute discussion. So like that, we'll be going module 1, module 2, and then what is it? Yeah, we're breaking for lunch around 1 o'clock, 10 to 1, I think, according to the schedule. And then we'll reconvene after lunch for the second and third module. As we go along, if anyone has any question or would like some clarification, or if somehow, because the acoustic, can you hear in the back? You can hear? It's okay? Yeah. In any event, we're not such a large group. Yeah, there's a hand up there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got one question. Again, it says in the afternoon, our schedule starts at 2:45.
Correct.
Our lunch starts at 2:15.
Is it?
At least mine.
Okay. Well, I don't know about lunch timings and lunch schedules. Actually, Janmashtami Prabhu, who's... I have to put the blame on somebody. He helped to work out the schedule, and I assume that it would not be conflicting with, in a major way like it seems to. Everyone is having lunch around the same time? I don't know.
Generally, it's 2.
Generally, 2, right?
We could work on the second session, we would clear that.
But it sounds like we're going to have to delay it right now.
But you have the third session, third module before lunch.
Third one before lunch?
We have the third module. We have three L3 modules and break for lunch.
This one's my second. So in other words, what is your suggestion again?
What is how time is lunch and ends?
2:00.
No, it begins at what time?
2:15.
It begins at 2:15. Ends at?
3:00.
So it might be better to just have the three modules, 1, 2, 3?
Seems
like
that. And then break for lunch and come back for the
fourth.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like we don't have a choice. Yeah. I'm sorry about this and it's a good thing you brought it up because lunch is important, of course. That's also part of our ashram. So I think we have to do it like that for today. And I'm sorry for whatever inconvenience that might cause to us, but it seems like we don't have a choice right now. Any other points or question before we allow Samba Prabhu to make his presentation? Okay, I don't see any hands up. So, Samba Prabhu? Hare Krishna.
So you'll have to excuse me because I've never given a seminar before and I've probably only ever attended maybe one or two seminars on a partial basis. So I don't know how this is going to come across. So one thing is that we can see that when Srila Prabhupada was with us, there were different phases of his development at ISKCON. And also we can find in the books, Srila Prabhupada's books, that there are different emphases which appear at different times during his period with us. The other day I met this devotee from Belgium, from the Bhaktivedanta Library Services, what's his name, Vishnumurti. He's doing a project called Vanipedia. And he's been studying all of Srila Prabhupada's teachings. And he's actually launching a website quite soon on that. And he told me that in his work of categorizing the different teachings, he found that about 70% of Prabhupada's teachings, whether it be in the books or in lectures or in conversations, whatever it may be, was related to Varnashram in some way or another. Either descriptions of the way Vedic society was in terms of encouraging us to try to kind of emulate that, or direct instructions. So we can see that when Srila Prabhupada, in the 70s, in the period of the 70s, we began to get farms. Prabhupada really emphasized that we should get land and start to develop simple living projects. So simultaneously to this, we found that Prabhupada also introduced Gurukulas. And in the Gurukulas, for instance, he was saying that every Gurukul means every student should go to Gurukul to learn to become very simple and obedient and self-controlled and learn how to address every woman as mother. So I thought it was very interesting how there is this one side where the boys should be very simple and self-controlled. On the other side, they should learn to address every woman as mother. It's interesting how he grouped those two together. So we can see that it's very much a cultural. He was trying to give a cultural education, a kind of a way in which the children could imbibe character. So the gurukuls were there, the farms were there, and Prabhupada was emphasizing those. I saw a video recently of Prabhupada here in Mayapur, and it was interesting because the video is showing Prabhupada in Mayapur, and then it focuses in on some oxen which are going past, and you can see how the devotees were all thinking oxen, simple living, because that was what Prabhupada was emphasizing. When I joined in 76, there was one of the things which helped me to join was a Back to Godhead magazine, which was all about our farm in New Vrindavan. And it showed how the devotees were living very simply in farming, and this whole philosophy that Srila Prabhupada had of simple living and high thinking was demonstrated in this. So I found that very interesting, and we can see that that was the focus at that time. So then what happened was, Srila Prabhupada went into Samadhi, and the movement moved on, and we developed a lot of very big projects. For instance, in England in the 70s, we had we started to get a project called Chaitanya College, which was a huge stately home in England. And it cost millions of pounds to develop, maintain this project. So there was a big push on Sankirtan, getting the devotees out in book distribution to make money to fuel these projects. A lot of energy was put into that. And we found, as it was documented in the ISKCON journal, in the ISKCON communications journal, sometime in 1990, I think it was discovered that as a result of this pushing for expansion, a lot of energy was taken out of the gurukulas and out of the farms. Anyone that could do anything was put into managing the Sankirtan, the book distribution. And it seemed to be at the expense of gurukulas and farms. And gradually we found that these both programs depleted to such a degree that, practically speaking, they ceased to be active in any kind of appreciable way. So the years have gone by, and we've seen how now the farms, in many cases, the farms are just places in which a few grihasthas that work in the cities, they live there, and it's a nice place to live, but they're not really doing very much in the way of farming. We have one or two farm communities where there is some farming going on, but not very much. The same thing with the schools. The schools have changed from being a place where, in many cases, I should say, the schools have changed from being education establishments which are focused on spiritual life and character, and are catering more for accommodating or equipping the children to be able to function in the material world, giving them academic qualifications so that they can function in the material world. And we can find that also amongst the general mass of devotees, if you bring up Varnashram, there is a lot of resistance, a lot of, oh, well, what does that mean? We've tried Varnashram in so many ways. There were projects that went along and they failed. So it seems to be that, Varnashram cannot be achieved. So it's important to note that while these things happened in terms of the gurukulas being neglected, farms being neglected, this wasn't a conscious decision that we're going to neglect these things. But the mission was going on. Devotees were doing what they could, what they thought was best for Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada certainly emphasized book distribution, spreading the mission, growing the mission. And so everyone was acting in good faith to try to increase. But because of a lack of maturity, maybe because they weren't spending enough time reading Srila Prabhupada's books, somehow or another, some key elements of Srila Prabhupada's mission were neglected. So for various reasons. So now we have the situation where there is a lot of misunderstanding about Varnashram. And there are a lot of psychological hurdles, if you like, in the implementation of Varnashram. Now, one we heard years ago on certain farms, the temple president or whatever, the leader of the farm, would gather the devotees and say, okay, now we're going to implement Varnashram. Srila Prabhupada wanted us to implement Varnashram. So you will be a Brahmin, you will be a Kshatriya, you will be like this. There was a kind of an attempt, but it was a very superficial attempt to develop an ashram. Let's see. Yeah, so one of the big hurdles is that of being a Shudra. There is a big fear. Nobody wants to be labeled as a Shudra. And there's a kind of an understanding that Shudra, you know, that's the lowest class, you know. In fact, sometimes you can hear devotees saying, "Oh, just a Shudra." Shudra, you know, low class, you know, not worth listening to, kind of insignificant, you know, has no consequence, like this. You know, you can see a worker in the street, someone like digging very gross, spitting, you know, Shudra, the Shudra mentality, you know, like this. We have this kind of whole concept of Shudra as being a very low thing. But interestingly, we find that one very important person, very senior figure in our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, is Ramananda Rai. So Ramananda Rai was actually a Shudra of the Kayasta class. So here in Bengali, then, apparently when Prabhupada was writing his purports on this particular subject, he was describing that in Bengal, the Kayastas are considered to be very highly intelligent. Prabhupada describes here, they were known to be extremely learned and intelligent and often occupied the posts of lawyers or politicians. So I thought this was very interesting because, you know, in the West, lawyers and politicians, they're the most elevated people, at least the politicians. You know, they're flying around the world in limousines and they're given all protection. You know, President Bush is flying in Air Force One, you know. But actually, if we examine it, this kind of person is a Shudra. So what's going on here? You've got a person who's considered, on the one side he's a Shudra. On the other side, it's actually a very elevated position in the world today. So the fact is that politicians and lawyers, they provide essential services. There are so many essential services in this world. There are so many things that need to be done to serve society. And these are done by Shudras. So a Shudra can be, on the one hand, can be very low in terms of intelligence or in terms of the kind of work that they perform. And they can also be very high in terms of intelligence and the kind of work they perform. Shudra is not necessarily determined by the type of work in the sense of whether it be manual or intellectual. Shudra is more defined in the sense of a person who his ability is to serve, but he's not particularly good at organizing or producing wealth or teaching. Because these are occupied, we understand that there are four types of spirits, that everybody in the human society, there are four types of human beings. And these four types of human beings have to occupy particular occupations in society, in particular positions. So we have to get over this kind of idea that Shudra is a low position. And we should understand that actually Shudra encompasses so many positions in society. So the tendency is in the world now for us to be very superficial and to see these things in a very superficial way and not really pay much attention to the actual wisdom and facts behind it. So Prabhupada emphasized the whole purpose of one ashram is that people are educated so that they can progress towards the goal of life, which is to actually transcend this material world and go back to Godhead. So every human being is responsible to do the utmost to transcend material nature and to help others to do the same. Everybody is a leader to whatever degree they want to take on that responsibility. So in France, there was a social theorist, and his name was Emile Durkheim. And he said that when social norms are in place, laws are unnecessary. And when social norms are not in place, laws are unenforceable. So Srila Prabhupada made a similar observation. He said, when there is Varna Shankara population, the people cannot be properly controlled for peace and prosperity, regardless of great legislative assemblies, parliaments, and similar bodies. So society has degenerated into of the Society of Banashankara, less than Shudra, because there is no systematic method of teaching people how to realize their potential according to their particular nature. So therefore, and the other side of it is because the whole world is oriented towards making money, and the philosophy is that if you can study and get a good job and make more money, then that is success. Make more money so you can buy things and enjoy life. So the whole world is permeated by this. And even this thinking has seeped into our own society. And we can see that demonstrated by the fact that often parents would prefer their children to have an academic education as opposed to an education which equips them to live spiritual life. Other problems with developing Varnashram. Varnashram requires an economic base based on the land and cows. Right now, in our society, we can see that everybody is forced to leave the society to work outside because we have no economy based on the land and cows. And in this way, devotees are forced to live in society outside. Srila Prabhupada described, when Srila Prabhupada was in his last days, when Jayadvaita Maharaj was holding the microphone to his mouth and he was giving the last purports, he described how association is extremely important, and that devotee association is the prime necessity for us, and that when devotees live and work together, they cultivate knowledge. And by this cultivation of knowledge, we understand Krishna consciousness, and we understand the need for Varnashram. So the Varnashram system would provide a means by which devotees could live and work together, providing all their needs within the community, and naturally knowledge would be cultivated. A lot of the reasons why there are misunderstandings about Varnashram today are because we're not taking the time to read the books and study the conversations and read the correspondence that Srila Prabhupada made, in which it's very clear. It's very clearly emphasized that we should create an ideal unit of society to demonstrate how we can actually live in this world in a Krishna conscious way and cultivate knowledge in order to go back to Godhead. So Varnashram is actually a preaching tool, and we have to recognize it for that, and we have to take the time to consider all the different details and points that Srila Prabhupada has given us. Another thing is that oftentimes people describe that in order to develop Varnashram, we need to set up a self-sufficient community. So actually, Prabhupada describes in his books how self-sufficiency is not possible in a very small unit. It actually requires several villages to really become self-sufficient. And we find that in India, for instance, Indian society was based on villages. And the villages were, practically speaking, self-sufficient as a group. There would be, the transportation system would go not maybe beyond a day's bullock cart ride. So you got everything within a day's bullock cart ride of your village. And 90% of the things that you needed were available in that situation. Now, of course, now today, land is very expensive. There are hardly any devotees that actually want to go out and do this. Maybe a few devotees would start a little project, a little village project somewhere. But it's not something that is, it's not an easy thing to do, and it requires to be subsidized. Srila Prabhupada, when he wrote his Gita Nagari essay in 1949-1950, he describes how we should find amongst the Indian community some Suchis and Srimatis, pious Indians, who will finance the Gita Nagari project. This was his village project, to the tune of 10,000 rupees a month, and he wrote this back in the 1950s. So Prabhupada recognized that in order for us to revive the whole Varnashram system, it needs to be subsidized and it needs to be carefully managed. So this is another challenge. We have to recognize that it requires, sometimes devotees are thinking, well, you're doing self-sufficiency, but we're just putting resources in and we're not getting anything back, what's going on? So we have to understand, we have to be patient, that we're trying to basically reestablish Varnashram in society where it's being neglected and discredited. The main point, of course, in all of this, the main reason why Srila Prabhupada wanted us to implement Vayashram, and he stressed this, was to save time for chanting Hare Krishna. So this seems like a contradiction also, because if anybody's ever looked at self-sufficiency in farming, you know, farmers are known for working from dawn till dusk. You know, they work every daylight hour, and then when they get home, they just kind of collapse, you know, having to be completely exhausted after a full day's work. Now, this, of course, is because that the modern system of farming is based on, it's actually not really farming, it's agribusiness. It's making as much money as you can out of as little land as possible. So the whole emphasis is on developing economically without understanding our actual relationship with the land. So Srila Prabhupada describes how we actually have to, we only grow what we need. And what we don't, whatever is left over, like the stalks of the plants, etc., that's food for the cows. Krishna's provided it very nicely. But whatever we eat, whatever we grow produces food for us, and then whatever we can't eat is fed for the cows. And the cows, being the mother of society, and the bull being the father of society, this creates a very nice system. And you only need to work for 3 or 4 months a year, and you can produce all of your necessities. And then this gives you time for chanting Hare Krishna. There was a Japanese farmer named Fukuoka. I don't know if any of you have heard of him. He was a plant scientist. And later on, he realized that this whole idea of engineering plant life was false. And he started to get into a way of living which was extremely simple farming. He used to call it do nothing farming. So it's an interesting system. It's not quite what Prabhupada taught us, but it recognizes many principles that are there in the idea of simple living. And he was pointing out how in the farms, if you go to Japan, you'll see some fields like this. And in the middle of the fields, there'll be a little shrine. And in that shrine, there'll be some haiku poetry. And anybody who knows anything about haiku poetry will know that to write haiku, you need to be in a very calm state of mind, you need to have some time, you need to be reflective and thinking. So he was saying that the farmers of old, they were making these little shrines, they were writing this haiku poetry, and they were living very happy, simple lives. They didn't have this challenge of trying to produce food to sell on the market. They were just producing what they needed. In fact, if you look at the world in general, you'll find that in traditional communities, people were self-sufficient from the farms. Okay. So in this way, we can see that there are these challenges are there, and we have to be careful to reflect on how we can try to take the time and carefully think out the ways in which we can try to fulfill Srila Prabhupada's desires to develop Vayashram. So, thank you very much.
Time constraints. so we should take maybe about 10 minutes to have a little bit of interaction on what we have heard, let's say, so far. The idea is to take 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes, and then afterwards take a short break before we continue or go into our second module. any questions or any comments on what we have covered so far? As we mentioned earlier, it's a very big topic. It's a huge endeavor to actually come to grips with the subject matter of Varnashrama. It will take us, that's why we have like 16 sessions, so to speak, to cover various aspects. This is just the very early beginning stage. One thing we didn't mention earlier is that we have like some pamphlets, which if you did not get yet, I think are available at the book table or here. This summarizes and touches on some of the points that were brought up by Samba Prabhu. And so maybe we can take, you know, 10 minutes to hear I believe the second module will allow us more time for discussion, just so that we don't run out of, you know, it means we have to follow a particular schedule. So we have approximately 10-15 minutes that we can maybe exchange. So we'd like to hear, you know, it's very important actually to hear from the devotees. For example, his subject or his topic was challenges. He touched on a few points. One of them, this whole thing about being classified, you know, as whatever. I mean, no one has any problem with being classified as a Brahmana, but other people will have difficulty being classified. Well, whether we need to be classified at all is a whole topic of discussion. Sambha Prabhu also mentioned about like economic base, the importance and the need, and how Varnashram actually cannot, I mean, one of the basic components for Varnashram in order to actually live a more simplified lifestyle is that the whole economy has to be much more simplified, which is actually there when people live a more an agrarian-based lifestyle than what we do, the way we're doing today, where, for example, the majority of our devotees who are initiated brahmanas are working at a job, getting a salary, which is completely contrary, actually, to how a brahmana should actually be making his livelihood, I mean, according to our shastra, according to what Srila Prabhupada has taught as well. It'd be nice to hear from any of our devotees here what are the challenges, or if you have any questions on what was presented.
Yes.
Boris can try to speak, maybe facing the audience a little bit, so that, and as loud as possible, yeah. Maybe just come a little bit closer here, and so we can see, yeah, this face a little bit, yeah.
Sanabhu described about the need for getting our farms subsidized. So I just wanted to know, this subsidy is expected in terms of getting the land, for the initial preparation of land, or is it even after getting all these things done, does he think that we need still subsidization once the devotees are working? Because we find many farmers who are earning a lot from farming. So our intention is not to make money, but at least if the land is there and if it is cultivable land, if the initial things have been done, then I'm not able to understand why we need like a lot of subsidization on a long-term basis. So in which regard this subsidization is necessary? Like Srila Prabhupada said that if we have restaurants, we can sell the ghee or something like that. So if we combine these things, we produce some extra and then we sell it, then we should not be needing subsidization.
Okay, it's a fact that Srila Prabhupada was talking about creating something from scratch. And to whatever degree we are successful in providing all of our needs, then we may not need subsidization. So that it's a fact that it's not that we just have to have subsidization at any cost. But the idea is that it may be that in the beginning we will need subsidies, and our devotees, you know, whoever is assisting, should understand that we shouldn't expect that everything will it's just going to happen overnight. But as you say, once things are developed and you're producing, one thing is it's a mistake to think that we shouldn't do like profit wasn't into cash crops, into growing something to sell. The whole point was, Prabhupada says it won't be a success. So I was wondering, you know, as you said, farmers are successful. So how will it be not a success if you do that? What I understood from that was that you won't become Krishna conscious because you'll spend all day working to make money. And you won't take the time, you won't save time for chanting Hare Krishna. So the whole purpose of this is to save time to chant Hare Krishna. So that's the important aspect. So we should produce all our needs and thus. And the rest is chanting Hare Krishna. Is that okay?
Anyone else have some comment?
Well, also farming communities, it's a generational thing. You know?
like the first generation go in, they do all that, you know, and then the next generations get it easier. In about two or three generations, the things will be in place. So even if you get your food together, then you've got to start working on some schooling because children are coming, and then this, and then that, and that. And especially it will need to go along because we're starting from scratch, not just the project itself, but our knowledge of how to implement these things. So a lot of education will need to be provided, preaching, various things. You have to preach to convince people to come. You know, so until the thing is fully functioned and all the elements are in place, you'll need money. If you don't have a Ayurvedic facility, sometimes devotees will be sick. They'll have something, you know. So in that sense, support has to be there until we get the ball rolling.
If I can just make a brief comment. For example, a number of our projects, I'm thinking especially more so in the West, where one needs more infrastructure. For example, take one of our projects like Sharanagati in Western Canada, or even Prabhupada Village in North Carolina. Devotees have generally had to work for many years and hard also to get money to buy the land, number one. Secondly, you have the land, that's good, but you have to live somewhere. So the devotees have to continue working, sometimes borrowing money to build a house. So by the time they have purchased the land, built a house, then they have to continue working to actually pay off some debts or, you know, bills. And it's like a vicious circle. So in other words, the Vedic system was that land was easily provided, isn't it? We don't have that in place. If down the line, and that is something that our ISKCON society maybe needs to look at in the initial stage to provide various kinds of assistance or subsidies so that some more easy beginning can be undertaken, let's say, by families until they can begin to work in or live in a more self-sufficient manner. So different countries will have different situations also. So I would say that in looking at what we have in different continents, that because we don't have also, culturally speaking, the whole Vedic culture supporting us, as mentioned by Hridoya Chaitanya Prabhu, we are starting in most places from scratch. We also are very much lacking in in-depth knowledge of what it entails to actually introduce and implement Varnashram communities. Many things we have to learn, a lot of education has to go through that. So probably every project or every community or every farm or every village, that's something we'll touch upon also. The whole idea of Varnashram, actually, we should try to envision it more in terms of the traditional village system that we find in the Vedic literatures and that we find actually in the Asian countries as well, where people, when there are a number, a sufficient number of families, can begin to live in a more self-sufficient manner. If you're only one or two families, then it's much more difficult. You can have, there are many farms where there's one or two families, or one family, right? One family will have a farm. So we're looking more on a large scale in terms of creating or establishing villages, which will, to a large extent, be based on self-sufficiency, on governing themselves as well. That's an important topic we'll come back to later on. We can take possibly some comments or questions or from other devotees, although we have to keep it short because we should be breaking around this time. Any other question or comment possibly? Yes, Dr. Rupa.
So when you say the Varnashram mission, you consider this to be synonymous with establishing self-sufficient communities?
Yes, very much. On a very large scale. And on the standard following the standard system that we have found historically up until just recently, maybe a few hundred years ago, you know, since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, which has brought our modern society where it's at right now, completely industrialized, mechanized, etc. And where, you know, people, like now in America, less than 5% of the population are living on the land. And the trend, Madhava Prabhu, where's Madhava? Yeah. You were mentioning how here in India, within, somebody was making some projection that within so many years, what percentage of people will be living in the cities?
By the year 2025, 45% of India will be living in the cities.
45%, yeah.
Correct.
I mean, so there are various statistics of that nature. In other words, the trend is there. Modernization, mechanization, industrialization means abandoning the simple way and, you know, getting into all kinds of machinery, etc., like that. The whole emphasis on material, you know, prosperity, well-being, etc. So actually, Varnashram and Varnashram Dharma, we'll get into more details on this later on, because, I mean, that's especially tomorrow. Tomorrow we're dealing with Varnashram specifically, and then the next day we're dealing with education and how both are very intimately connected. And it's very, very important. Some very key concepts which we cannot, it's like a little difficult to introduce, because it's like if you introduce them, you have to start explaining them more in detail, and it's like jumping into other modules, so to speak. But this is the question you're asking is pertinent, in that Varnashram is meant to be seen and meant to be understood. At least that's how I personally, in hearing and reading Prabhupada's books, envision for the future, for our ISKCON society and for the whole world, you know, to have society. In other words, we're talking about, to make it simple, simplified, we need to revert. I'll make that blank statement. We need to revert to an urban-based social lifestyle. Whereas now, society for the last so many decades has been moving and continues to move towards urban-based living, which is unnatural, unsustainable, and which is simply increasing the modes of nature, you know, the modes of passion, the modes of ignorance. And so we need to reverse that. That is the understanding that we should have in terms of when Prabhupada speaks about bringing an overhaul in society. Somebody, you had your hand up? Can you come here, actually? You're supposed to be sitting here, by the way. Somebody get a chair for him. This is Madhava Prabhu. Yeah, this is Madhava Prabhu, who was not here when we introduced everyone, so I'm introducing him right now. He's based in Gokuldham and involved with, I mean, in a very hands, you know, down-to-earth way. Go ahead, Prabhu.
Just want to answer to Savyasachi Prabhu's question about subsidizing farms. Since, at least I'm speaking from the Indian context, we've been using in India from 1966, truly, I would say, a huge amount of fertilizers and other additives in the soil. So today is 2008, so it's been about 40 years almost of this spoiling of the land. So you need to get back, if you want productivity to come back to the land, you need to actually get huge amounts of organic matter back into the soil. So to do that, you need to actually subsidize it to some extent. Then you can slowly convert your soil back to the stages which it was before 1966 and be very self-sufficient with your soil. The soil is one of the very important aspects of our growing. So you need to actually, I wouldn't say a huge amount, but at least to some degree you have to get back your soil. It takes at least 3 years to get a soil back from repeated use of organic, especially powder, get it back to production.
Okay, one last question, so that we should break for 10 minutes and then we can come back and continue our discussion. Yes, Prabhu. You.
Me.
Yeah.
When is Varnashrama ideally applied?
Where is Varnashrama ideally applied? Prabhupada said everywhere. Well, I mean, Prabhupada has explained that Varnashrama actually can be introduced anywhere. But introducing Varnashram means it is much easier to introduce Varnashram in a rural setting than in the middle of New York City. Although some basic principles connected with Varnashram may be introduced in New York City or any big city, but the ideal model, which is there in our Vedic literature, and there's some wonderful purport I'd like to read later on, has been given by Krishna himself. You know, Krishna and Balaram were living in Vrindavan. That is actually the ideal Varnashram setting. But, and that can be introduced in any country. Of course, it will vary. Like in the Western countries, there's more of a challenge because of the weather conditions, etc. But it is not meant just exclusively for some particular place or some particular country or like that. I would like that we continue this discussion, but that we just take a few minutes. I don't know if water is available, or anyways, they're like 10 minutes. We can just take a short break, and we'd like to request everyone to come back here so that we can start, let's say, at 20 to 12. Okay? Hare Krishna. Somebody can open the door so we can. Huh?
Water is available outside.
Okay, so okay, that's good. Have you taken the attendance? Yes, ma'am.
Because they were pouring in between.
No, attendance is something that paper circulated when people are sitting. No.
Temple president of Radha Desh community.
I've heard his name.
Presentation was there, no?
And set up. Yeah, can you set it up?
No.
He did a whole thing now.
Yeah, I can use. We can use the my laptop, and it is coming in my laptop. So we'll take it from
my
the.
Okay. It's not coming here.
It's not coming.
Well, can you put back my computer the way it was? It's all messed up. My screen is gone. All my files are all mixed up. Next time, if you have somebody, they should know what they're doing. Somebody gave a paper about something.
Yeah, when we took it away again, it's from Germany.
Oh. Okay. Two. You need to click. That's not the way it works. My home. Anyways, maybe from the next session we can just take up and see.
Yeah, but have you got this updated? Because the one you've given me is different to the one you were using.
Yeah.
So if I have an updated one, I can.
Okay, I'll give you mine, I suppose.
They were handing them out, right? There's some spare ones.
We continue with discussion and then take a break and then start the third module.
Well, you have 12:40 to 12:50,
small break.
10-minute break. Yeah.
And then module 2, 3.
Module 3, then 1:40 to 2.
Discussion.
Discussion.
4.
2 to 4 is prasadam. And then again. Okay. We'll leave it here. Summer flu? That's something we'll be announcing in the next.
Okay. All right. And so this is the next thing, right? Module 2.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. So that part is there. So.
Hey. Are you on? How are things? You're here or where are you?
No, I just come from the festival.
You come from the festival.
everywhere. It's the best way to be.
Yeah.
Why not? Free.
Good.
Ready to join any project.
Yeah, good. Which country are you mostly in?
In Italy still now 6 months. Then I tour India for 6 months.
Okay. Well, I'll speak to you a little bit later. You have a pen drive? Where? Otherwise, I have one. Thank you. Where's my black bag? Can I find my black bag?
Black bag.
People know what they're doing with computers. This is Kingston. Is that Kingston?
Yes, Kingston.
It is Kingston.
Yeah.
insensé, de mon introduction sur les quatre mouvements. Ça, c'est...
Beaucoup de choses ont été changées depuis que tu es arrivé, depuis que je suis parti. Ça, on va l'avoir dans le second module. Ok. Vous êtes avec nous
lui,
pour les.
Dans le Slovaquie, c'est pas mal lui qui a créé la communauté.
C'est là qu'il y a le collège aussi.
Je ne sais pas.
Radadesh, tu dis? Radadesh.
Radadesh en Belgique.
Oh, oui, c'est là qu'il y a le Bhaktivinoda College.
Ils ont une joke, ils disent que les Belges sont nés avec une brique dans l'estomac. Okay. Donc, comme ça, construire la part.
C'est quoi le nom de la communauté là-bas?
Radadesh. Radadesh, puis son nom, c'est le Deutsche Tanner en Belgique.
Est-ce que tu peux peut-être lui demander à quel... plus tard, ouais. Pas aujourd'hui nécessairement, mais durant la session. Ouais.
So this goes on for 50 minutes, this next module, out of which 30 minutes is discussion for me, is that correct?
Yes. The second module enables one discussion. But right now we're still going to have some
more. It's still some more discussion. Because we're over time in terms of. We're supposed to have started this module at 11:20. Yeah, 11:20 is 12:10 is module 2.
Okay, so we can immediately begin.
Yeah, so do you want to start now? Some of them are not back, but back to the room. Just start. Oh, here he comes.
Attendance. Huh? Attendance. Module 1, module 1, per day. Different names. This is smart. Just pass it on.
So they just sign their name beside it or something?
No, this is taken by present. Huh? Say P or P.
Anyway, I mean, you know, you handle that whatever way it's going to be back.
Should I give it now, right away? Or
you make rule. You should know how to do attendance normally.
So if everyone would like to take their positions,
you just pass it around.
We're going to show a presentation here, so one might want to move around to see this presentation, PowerPoint presentation. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Module 1. Okay. So we want to do that later. Obviously, we're going to have to circulate this every time there's a module, yeah? Maybe we'll have to do it at the end of the day. Right. Okay, so we have to do it at each module. Isn't that a bit of time as well, I suppose? We'll be ready to get them in the way.
Well,
okay, so I'll do it now. All right. I have a an attendance list, and there are these different rows. So for all of you who are here for module 1 and 2, if you could just sign your name after your name on the list here, so that we just know who attended. So right now you just have to sign, if you're here for module 1 and module 2, you just sign in these two places.
And if your name is not there,
if your name is not there, you can add it. So we're going to circulate this while this is all going on. Just put your names on there. So this is a PowerPoint presentation which Bhakti Raghava Maharaj is going to give. This is called the ISKCON's fourth wave, Sri Varnashram class of the society. Maharaj is going to give a roughly a 20-minute presentation, and then we'll have about 30 minutes for discussion. The schedule has been adjusted now. So this is going to go on up to 12:40. What's this 12:40? This is a 10-minute break. Okay. Up to 12:40, then there'll be a 10-minute break. Again, we'll come back at 12:50. And module 3 will start at 12:50, which will go until 1:40. And then discussions from 1:40 till 2. And then the break will start at 2 o'clock, and everyone we should come back by 4 o'clock. And the 4 o'clock session will be in the next room.
Correct.
So that's, I'll just go over that once more. From now until 12:40, this module will go on. This is module 2. Then there'll be a 10-minute break. Then from 12:50 to 1:40 will be module 3. Some discussions in module 3 from 1:40 to 2 o'clock. And then the break from 2 o'clock for lunch until 4 o'clock this afternoon. And the 4 o'clock session will be in the next room. Okay, so thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay, so Maharaj is now going to begin this module 2, which is fourth wave of ISKCON, the Varnashram class of society.
Sit back and relax. So, this is a presentation on what Srila Prabhupada, as we will see during the presentation, termed as movements. Four movements, or four divisions, or four waves within the larger Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. We generally, up until maybe a couple of years ago, this concept was not very clear in my mind. And I just want to mention how it did become clear. And there are two important references which we will be quoting, I will be showing in a few minutes, where from this idea of four movements becomes like crystal clear. And I would request all the devotees to try and follow as attentively as possible. And then, naturally afterwards, we will invite some discussion, clarification, whatever may be there. I'll let the PowerPoint speak for itself and try to minimize explanations, but whenever necessary, I'll provide them. Which button is, I'm not using my computer. Okay, here we go. ISKCON's four movements. This is the first of the four movements. Who can identify what is happening here?
Harinam Sankirtan.
Jai Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki.
Jai.
Anyone having problem here with Harinam? So the Harinam is going on, right? This was when Srila Prabhupada, I guess, in Paris, looks like. So Kirtan. Huh?
Installation.
Yeah. So, but specifically, we are seeing devotees performing Harinam. So, that actually is the first movement. We'll come back to that. Oh, second one is actually deity installation. So Harinam is different from deity installation. Okay? That's the second movement. Number three, what's happening here?
Initiation.
Spiritual initiation. That is the third movement. Now the fourth one is a little tricky. You have to be very attentive. You have to look at the screen. It's coming up right now. Who can identify where this took place? Huh?
Hyderabad
Farm. What's the name of the farm that Prabhupada gave for Hyderabad?
New
Naimi Sharanya. This was probably in 1976 or something, or 75. Srila Prabhupada surrounded by some of his leaders at one of the trees, actually, where the farm is still located, where we have Krishna Balaram. Okay. Moving on here. As we mentioned earlier, number one is the Sankirtan movement. Number two, temple worship movement. Number three, spiritual initiation movement. And number four, the Varnashrama movement. Now where do we get, how do we substantiate these four clearly defined movements? This is what we'll be showing right now. Number one, the Sankirtan movement. I'm quoting actually from two important sources. Now if devotees have not read these two important sources, you will not be able to understand or accept this clear distinction of the four movements. The first one goes back to 1949. 1949, in a letter to one prominent, maybe not prime minister, but some important person. The quote is coming up in a few seconds. Srila Prabhupada outlines these four movements. And these same four movements are again delineated in the essay on Gita Nadari, which Srila Prabhupada first printed in his Back to Godhead magazine in 1956. Very interesting comparison which needs to be made and needs to be brought to devotees' attention. Not only are we going back to 1949 with these letters and to 1956 with the essay on Gita Nagari, but we are also going, and we will be comparing in our PowerPoint, how these are related to what Srila Prabhupada has done when he introduced and registered the ISKCON Society in 1966 in New York, and what has taken place in the years afterwards. So this is the 1949 letter to the Honorable Sardar Balabhaji Patel, Deputy Minister for the Government of India. In the midst of his multifarious duties, Gandhiji never missed to attend to his Randum Kirtan meeting. This is one of the soundest methods for the culture of devotion to God. In the opinion of Srimad Bhagavatam, one who is imbibed with the devotion of Godhead is also endowed with all the good qualities of the gods. But one who is not a devotee of Godhead has not any value for his good qualities because he utilizes his so-called good qualities for ulterior purposes. First point Prabhupada makes in the letter, referring to Harinam. Again in Sankirtan movement, this is a continuation actually. As such, the easy way to raise the moral standard of people in general is to make this Sankirtan movement, we've underlined it, more popular all over the world by philosophical discourses based on reasoning and moral and ethical codes. the Vaishnava Charis, especially Lord Chaitanya and his six Goswami disciples, give us ample opportunity and scope for his work, for this work. Lord Chaitanya first inaugurated the Sankirtan or random movement, and the later Goswamis supported it by scholarly philosophical synthesis. The six Sandarbhas by Srila Jiva Goswami are marvelous in this respect. And continuing on this point, leaders and politicians may take lessons from the life of Mahatma Gandhi, who was undoubtedly a great and busy politician with respect to his daily evening prayer meeting and regular recitation of the text of Bhagavad Gita. He followed the principle of life most faithfully, even up to the last moment of his lamented life. People in general, and the leaders in particular, may follow the footprints of Mahatma Gandhi if they at all want to do some good to their followers. Such regular habit of reciting the reading of the Bhagavad Gita makes one able to get rid of the demoniac way of life and gradually rise up to the plane of pure devotion's life of the gods. Anyways, it continues. I don't want to labor too much on this point, right? So this is point number one, Sankirtan movement. That reference is there in the folio for those who have the folio. So here we are making a comparison on this first point between what Lord Chaitanya inaugurated and what Srila Prabhupada also inaugurated. Lord Chaitanya's beginning of Harinam Sankirtan in the streets of Navadvip Dham with Murdanga and Kartals, and the advanced stage of Nam Sankirtan, what Srila Prabhupada coined as Brihat Murdanga, the writings of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. This was Lord Chaitanya's beginning of the, you know, Sankirtan movement. And if we look, Srila Prabhupada's beginning, I'm sorry that it's disappearing. This is not really intentional. So comparing to what Lord Chaitanya did, Srila Prabhupada also began Harinam Sankirtan in the streets, well, in the Thompson Square Park, right, in New York, with Murdanga and Kartals, as Lord Chaitanya also. And then the advanced stage of Nam Sankirtan, Srila Prabhupada's books, the Brihat Murdanga. So we see a definite parallel, isn't it, between what Lord Chaitanya has done, and naturally the Acharyas, they simply push on or continue what the Acharyas, I mean what Lord Chaitanya has inaugurated. So this is we are on point number one, Sankirtan movement. Summary. Yeah, within the Sankirtan, therefore we find, what is the meaning of Sankirtan? It means Japa Kirtan, or Japa meditation. It means, you could say, Murdanga Kirtan, or Kirtan with Murdanga in the public. It also means the Brihat Murdanga Kirtan of book distribution. And it also has been, within our ISKCON society, presented through the writing of Srila Prabhupada's books and manifested through the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, BBT. It has also been continued through such institutes as the Bhaktivedanta Institute. And these are also connected, Gurukulas, and both Sri Mayapur, VIAC, Sri Vrindavan. Yeah, in other words, the educational aspect, writing of books and teaching from the books like that. And the Mayapur Institute here in Sridhar Mayapur, Bhaktivedanta College, here we go, in Radhadesh. Where is Lidoy Chaitanya Prabhu? Who's it? Oh, you're him. Okay, yeah, Hare Krishna. Yeah, you're him. Now we come to the second movement, temple worship movement. Again, making reference to the same letter that Srila Prabhupada is writing. The second item is to make up or take up the temple entry or temple worship movement. This is, in a real sense, a theistic cultural movement. Prabhupada emphasized that many times in his conversations or writings, how ISKCON society is first and foremost a cultural movement, isn't it? Cultural and educational movement. and the facility of opportunity shall be open to everyone, whatsoever he may be. All the past acharyas accepted everyone who desires to offer his respect to God, inspired by transcendental love and devotion, etc. Like that, the letter continues to emphasize the second point. So, like in Bull letter, to diffuse these temples, it will be to places where one can diffuse spiritual culture in every quarter. These temples or theistic institutions should therefore be reorganized as center of spiritual culture. Same theme, just elaborated upon a little bit more by Srila Prabhupada. And just coming along here, so you know, Prabhupada coins it the temple entry movement. Well, actually, Gandhiji coined it as temple entry movement. And then deities are mentioned, right? Deities are Radha and Krishna. So Prabhupada is writing and explaining how we should be doing this. So spiritual education, they're meant to be spiritual educational centers. So I'll just move along here. So I'm bringing up here the essay. What did Srila Prabhupada write in the essay of 1956 regarding temple worship? The mission of Gita Nagari must have its name amongst others to rectify the anomalies that have entered into the life of these centers of spiritual education.
Speaking about the Indian temples in India.
Yeah, temples in India.
Degraded.
This is part of the essay on Gita Nagari. This is just further supporting the main theme that is being presented. So, in the context of Lord Chaitanya, once again to make the comparison, Lord Chaitanya, we know, he sent the Goswamis in Vrindavan to establish, isn't it? To do a number of things, is to deeply study the Vedic literatures and also to relocate the lost holy places. And of course, the Goswamis in Vrindavan ended up building, you know, they inspired individuals to build big temples in Vrindavan. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur followed in the same way by establishing, rediscovering Lord Chaitanya's appearance, birthplace, yoga pit in Srinayapur. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he established, sorry for the disappearance here, not meant to disappear like this. I'm using a different computer. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he established 64 Gaudiya Maths, right, during his preaching time. And then we come to Srila Prabhupada in ISKCON. You all know Prabhupada's first temple was in New York. And then after spending some time in the U.S., he came to India to establish his big temples in Mayapur, Bombay, and Vrindavan. And then he established 108 temples around the world, and devotees continued to build temples also. Temples where the worship of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna have very high standard and therefore are very attractive, attracting so many people. So in other words, temple worship is something that we can see, you know, throughout our lineage of acharyas, beginning from the time of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The third movement is the spiritual initiation movement. Again, reference to 1949. Actually, in each of these divisions, I'm making a reference to this 1949 because it's like disappearing. And right after the 1949 reference, I'm making further reference to the 1956 essay on Gita Nagari. Okay? That's available once again in the folio. If you don't have the folio, we can get a copy for you. Not of the folio, but of this section of the folio. So the third item is to take up, this is in the letter, the Harijan movement. Gandhi had coined this expression. So Prabhupada, of course, he elaborates on that, and at one point he mentions that we are wanting to actually convert people from Maya Jana to Harijana. People who are in Maya to Maya consciousness to Hari consciousness. So this is basically the explanation Prabhupada is giving here, that we want to, Maya Jana into Hari Jana. And then, that continues, the same point continues, that the Maya Jana is a word which is applicable to everyone. Anyone can be converted from, you know, being in the modes of nature to become a devotee or pure devotee, but using strict disciplinary methods, as given by our acharyas. Okay, continuing along here. This is the 1956 essay, and Prabhupada mentions the same thing. Makes reference to the Harijan movement. I'm just going a little, because there's... Prabhupada is just explaining that actually it is not only for a small section of the population, but actually Gandhi's attempt was only scheduled or aimed at some particular section, but actually everyone is meant to become a Harijana, such as Arjuna, Prahlad, Dhruva Maharaj, etc. like that. And in that same essay on Gita Nagari, there is no bar for anyone to rise up to the position of Harijan. And this is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada gives a quote. Yes. And then, our comparison again, Lord Chaitanya. Where we find both Shiksha and Diksha Parampara. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was chanting the holy name in a scheduled way, as counting. Lord Chaitanya also induced everyone, that's the whole meaning of the Sankirtan movement, to chant the holy name. Also to chant and to become qualified, to become initiated. Lord Chaitanya personally counted on his fingers. He advised individuals to take diksha, to take initiation, instructed everyone to actually take up the role of becoming guru, instructing whatever we know, whatever we have learned in the science of devotional service. From the Goswamis of Vrindavan, beginning from Lord Chaitanya, who inspired the Goswamis of Vrindavan, up to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, everyone promoted spiritual diksha, either in the form of formal diksha what is it, formal or non-formal? Within our ISKCON society, spiritual initiation movement actually is connected with congregation, bringing in a lot of people together. So, for example, Srila Prabhupada introduced new Bhakta program within our ISKCON societies to train individuals who are taking spiritual life seriously. Youth programs were started and are ongoing in different temples around the world. Sunday school programs. These are all like different kinds of congregations. The Namhata program, which is like a major congregational preaching activity around the world. Bhakta Vriksha, which is connected with Namhata also. And the Ministry of Congregational Preaching. So this is facilitating or enabling people to come together, to follow some system, to become gradually qualified, to take initiation, to be connected in Guru Parampara. This is all part of the third movement, spiritual initiation movement. Now we come to the fourth movement. Actually, Srila Prabhupada has coined this fourth movement as the classless society movement. And a word of explanation on this in a few minutes. Again, the reference is there in the 1949 letter. The fourth item is to organize the must-discuss caste system. I just want to point out one small important point, actually, that if you read the essay on Gita Nagari, you will not find this fourth one. I mean, I should clarify. You will not find number four. You will find the text merged into number three. So unless one is attentive and on the lookout for understanding, or for example, unless one has read the letters of 1949, when one reads the essay on Gita Nagari, one will not so easily make the parallel. There is, as we can see, I hope everyone can see and understand the parallel between the 1949 letter that Prabhupada wrote and the 1956 essay that he has written or given in the Back to Godhead magazine. Is anyone unclear about this?
It was a publishing mistake. It was a publishing mistake, and since then, the essay on Gita Nagari has never really been published by the BBT, I mean outside of the folio, and in the folio they just recopied what was published in the Back to Godhead magazine.
Yeah.
And the people who were editing it were, you know, it was never been seen.
Maybe it was an error by the printer at that time or something like that. I'm pointing this out actually because it's, you know, in the context of Varnashram, it is, I would say, of crucial importance. It's such a small detail. It's a detail in one sense, but on the other hand, it is not a detail in that when you put this number four, where Srila Prabhupada begins to explain about Varnashram, although he does not use the word Varnashram, but he uses or speaks about classless society rather. But anyone who knows or understands a little bit about Varnashram will understand that. So in the website that we have on Varnashrama, varnashrama.org, we have actually edited and we have put it in this format, and we have also included the letters of 1949, which support these four divisions, you see. So anyways, this is, you know, Prabhupada is pointing out, right? The scientific division of the caste system. I mean, that's Varnashram. No one can argue that it's not Varnashram. So let's just continue along here with our presentation. Nancy Prabhupada is telling that it's not followed properly, but it needs to be reintroduced or corrected. In that same letter, 1949, so Srila Prabhupada just continues, that makes a real classless society. What is the meaning of classless society? Let me explain just very, very briefly. I mean, it's obvious once we understand it. I consider this as a very bold statement by Srila Prabhupada, that in the context of Varnashram, where we have four Varnas and four Ashrams, how can one make simultaneously a statement that this is a classless society? So we can only understand, and I mean that is the only way to understand the term classless society, when we see it in the context that all the members of this system of Varna and Ashram and Ashrama, when centered on Krishna, when performing devotional service, we are all devotees serving the Lord, therefore we are classless. In that sense. So classless does not mean that there are no divisions. The divisions are there, but there is that unity and that common denominator that we are all servants of Krishna, that we're all devotees. So in that sense, Srila Prabhupada is using the term classless society movement. We're getting, yeah, okay. So this is from the essay on Gita Nagari. Prabhupada directly uses, and we've just copied from his essay, movement of classless society. Or to put it more, you know, in our context, the Varnashrama society or Varnashrama movement. Classless society movement, okay, that's simply the continuation of the explanation. I don't have to read it. And also this is the same. It's quite long actually. Actually, Prabhupada makes reference to university here. The last two lines, right? It will be open door for all concern as much as the varsity, university, of all state is open for all with equal status of educational right. So the educational aspect, Srila Prabhupada stressed, within the system of Varnashram. And of course, Bhagavad Gita, yes. Okay, this is also important. This is taken from a letter written by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur to his son, and he's addressing his son, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as Saraswati. People in this world who are proud of their own aristocratic birth cannot attain real aristocracy. Therefore, they attack the pure Vaishnavas, saying they have taken birth in low-class families because of their sins. Thus, they commit offenses. The solution to this problem is to establish the order of Daivi, Varnashrama, and Dharma, something you have started doing. You should know that to be the real service to the Vaishnavas.
Sorry, question.
Yes?
Can you please tell us where we can find this letter? Is it in the database? Or?
I could not find it. I got this some time back. There's a big book. Some of you might have seen it. I'm not sure, it's not by DBT, on Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I found it in there. Yeah, I'm sorry I don't have.
I'll ask you later about it.
Yeah, right, okay. Just one. And we're just winding up here before we open up for questions. So Srila Prabhupada, of course, in going to the West, established the first Varnashrama community in the U.S., in Vrindavan. And the ISKCON Ministry for Cow Protection, I mean, these are things that are established or addressing the needs of Varnashram, let's say. I mean, there are more communities other than New Vrindavan that have been established. The ISKCON Ministry for Cow Protection and Agriculture. International Society for Cow Protection. These are basically some references where one can get more information on Varnashram by either visiting these places or, you know, getting in contact with them. Care for Cows, we know in Vrindavan. Kamarupas. I mean, other devotees, I'm just pointing out a few maybe more prominent. And this is something more recent, which we'll be having a whole session on this. This is a website that was established way back in 2002. Global Varnashram Educational, Social, Cultural Organization. And references should be in some of the pamphlets. There are pamphlets that you will be getting. I probably have this reference. So in all of these different places, devotees, if you write to them or communicate, you can get more information specifically regarding the Sri Varnashram. That is the end of the show. So we would like to it's a little warm in here. You're all very fortunate sitting under the fans. We have somehow put our table here.
Hot seat.
Without any pen. Anyway, it's okay. We'd like to hear some, or take, you know, some questions or comments. Yeah.
Well, the first time I read this and became acquainted with this, it became so obvious that this is, I mean, if we're going to preach, strategically speaking, this is all makes sense. You know, first you preach, you go out, you give the book, you chant the holy name. Then you need a temple for people to come and congregate and associate with devotees and develop their devotion. Then you need to be trained from a new bhakta that just, you know, comes and worship in a temple to somebody that, you know, goes to anartanagriti and etc. and becomes a qualified harijan or devotee. It's natural. And then when you have those people, then you need to put them somewhere. You need a society. You need more than just, you cannot accommodate whole society with a temple and a brahmachari ashram. So these are like natural phase. So we're at this stage right now where this need for this fourth movement is really felt, because, you know, there's, especially for grihasthas, families, for people of different background, it becomes, you know, the economical problem is what stops, you know, many devotees to do their service, you know. Oh, I would come, Prabhu, but you know, I have three kids, this, that, you know. So everybody's feeling constrained by this problem of, you know, economy and all various social problems we're facing in this country as a society. And it becomes so logical that, you know, that is the next step, that we start to live together. Actually, that is the real meaning of a congregation. Now congregation has started to mean, especially, you know, people living outside coming on Sunday or coming on festival. But actually a congregation means, you know, people will congregate. So, and that's the ultimate meaning of congregation. And unless we all live together, then the other movements, like especially, like, who is going on Harinam on a, like, daily basis? You know, it's very rare. Only brahmacharis or people like that, because we don't have time, we don't live together. Where in a natural setting, in a village setting, you know, this will give a complete new boost to the, you know, to all the other preaching activities, you know. And ultimately this is service to Vaishnava, like Prabhupada was explaining. And it's just a logical strategy when you look at it. Prabhupada had a very fixed plan, you know, introduced it, and eventually it creates a society. That's why he called it a society. We're meant to live as, you know, as Vaishnavas, ultimately.